An employer can, they can take away your desk, they can take away your computer, they can take away your job, but they can't take away your knowledge and your experience. So learn as much as you can while you're in the position that you're in.
Welcome to The Defense Never Rests with Morgan and Akins, your monthly dose of uncommon sense about all things legal and some that are not.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Defense Never Rests. I am your host, Tricia Baxter, and joining me today as co-host is Nate Bolander. Hey, Nate, what's going on?
Good morning. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm good. I see you're back in your one-room apartment, right?
I am. I'm back. New, this is the fourth or fifth podcast bathroom background I've had. I mean, I was in Charlotte for one, Florida for one, the office for a couple, so you keep getting me in different places.
Yeah, you're going to be eventually going to all 50 states when
we
broadcast.
That's right.
So what have you been doing keeping yourself busy outside of work? I mean, this COVID stuff's still throwing everyone for a loop, and we're going backwards, it seems. How are you coping?
We are. Besides walking the dogs, we're inside, and that means lots of movie and TV watching. We're not like binge watchers normally, but I have to say, I love Christopher Nolan, the director. Watched a wonderful Christopher Nolan movie last week called Tenet.
What's that?
Oh, it's incredible. It's about, I mean, he's the best. He could put out a picture of him watching paint dry and I'd watch it. But he did Inception, Interstellar, all the Batman movies, and it's so layered. And so we watched it, and then I've just read about it for 4 days now, and I want to watch it again after all this knowledge, but I highly recommend it.
Oh, I have to watch. I was looking for something to watch. Like you, I've watched more TV lately than I ever have. Me and my husband kind of do it together. It's an activity that we have, and all of our shows aren't on right now, so we have nothing to watch. I've been starting to get addicted to Netflix documentaries, but I don't really have anything in the wings to watch right now. So I'm going to check that out.
Please do.
A big, big fan of Interstellar. I love that movie. Mm-hmm. And the Batman movies are okay. What was the other one?
Inception, Memento.
Loved Inception. Yeah, Memento. So smart. Yeah. So smart.
Dunkirk. I mean, he weaves in the music. He weaves in. I mean, it's just, you can watch it 50 times and catch new stuff every time. He's the most brilliant. I'm not going to go on about it. We'll stop.
We could probably do another. I know one of our other episodes, we talked about movies. This is not that, but we do share some of the same movie and TV taste. So I love hearing your recommendations.
Yep.
Well, on today's podcast I'm so excited. I met this gentleman through LinkedIn. I clicked with him instantly. I just love his mindset. Rob McGaver, and he is the director of claims at West Bend Mutual Insurance. And if you think claims or insurance is boring, then you definitely want to check out this podcast episode, because we talk about kind of the career in general, like how you can make it a career and why it's so interesting, and mindset and mental health and stress and COVID and innovation. Like, there's a lot that we talk about on today's podcast. So let's get into it. Well, hey, Rob, welcome to the podcast. What's up?
Oh, not much. I appreciate you having me on. Thanks so much.
So I love having industry claims people on the podcast, because to be able to pick your brain and have it recorded, I mean, what's better than that? So thank you so much for coming on. Before we kind of get into the meat of it, let's get into background of your story, what you're doing now and how you got there.
Sure, absolutely. So my current title is I'm the director of claims for our large work comp division at West Bend Mutual. We're a carrier just outside of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I've been in the insurance industry for about 15 years. But I started in law enforcement, actually. So just before I flipped the switch to insurance, right after I graduated from college, I joined a local sheriff's department. And I worked there for a while, just realized it wasn't for me. And in the meantime, like most claims people, I just fell into it. Somebody had offered me a position while I was looking for another job in law enforcement, and I took it just thinking it would be a filler until I found something else, and I've stuck with it ever since.
I love that, because I think your experience, like you said, does mirror so many other people. But I think the industry is changing. So many people fall into claims, they don't choose claims, but I think the industry is changing. You have more of the colleges focusing on, you know, a risk degree, and I don't know what they're called, but they're focusing more on educating people in the insurance and claims world so that it's a career. And I've often said off the record or off podcast that I thought the insurance industry did a bad PR job in the career front. So I like the fact that you just highlighted that. Let's go back to your cop days, because that's fascinating. I've worked with several people in insurance that have a cop background, a lot of the SIU field, like the ex-cops get into the SIU world. And I love them because they have a knack for picking up on body language or truth. I don't know. They have just a knack on and reading people, I guess. What kind of stuff did you do in law enforcement? And what's your take on that?
When I joined the sheriff's department, it was one of the only sheriff's departments in our state who actually have deputies running the jail all the time instead of correctional officers. So I spent the vast majority of my time working in the county jail. And it turns out that jail kind of stinks no matter what side of the bars you're on. So I learned a lot in that position, though. And it's, again, it's you're dealing with the inmates, you know, learning to, you know, I guess, supervise them, but at the same time, kind of, you know, understand that, hey, you know, you don't necessarily want to be here. Sometimes I don't want to be here. You know, if we can even get through a shift without any issues, that would be fantastic. But again, it's it goes back to communication, right? At the same time, there's still people. They wanted to be, you know, talked to as such. And so, again, it's exercising that communication, expectations, having a, you know, certain level of respect and kindness for people, no matter, you know, what's going on in their life. And it certainly taught me a lot in those experiences, and something that I definitely carried over into the insurance field.
Yeah, that's such a great skill to have, because if you can have a level of communication, customer service, empathy for your insureds, then I think my experience, when I've seen claims people do that, they go so far. It's the customer service mindset. There's a mindset there, and maybe it can be taught. I have no idea, but the people that have it really go far. And I love that you actually had that in law enforcement before you went into claims. That's a misconception that I would have, that I would think there would be a certain level of contempt that that law enforcement officers would have for the people on the other side of the bars. The fact that you didn't, I think that's fascinating.
Well, and it's, again, it can't pass judgment on anybody. You know, you don't know how they got there. You don't, you know, somebody falls on hard times, whatever it might be, you know, you know, great parents, great mentors, whatever it might have been in my upbringing, you know, could that have been me at some point? You know, sometimes you have to ask yourself that. So, you know, it's again, it's just trying to, you know, have a certain level of respect for everybody, regardless of their background. And yeah, again, it was just getting through a shift with each other too. That was just it.
So then you decide, all right, law enforcement's not for you, or that position wasn't for you, and you start looking for other law enforcement jobs. How did you come in? How did you come into your first claims job?
Sure. So what I started doing was looking around at other municipalities who had a position on the road. That's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to, you know, get into patrol at the time, and nobody was hiring. And so I had a friend from high school who was in underwriting. Had no clue what that was, but sounded neat. And I was talking to him and his dad, who was also in insurance. They said, you know what, you would be great for claims. They would love you. And I said, well, what does claims do? And they said, well, they do a lot of what you're doing now, you know, investigations and, you know, dealing with people, sometimes unhappy people. And you should just give it a try, see what you think. And so, you know, I interviewed, I took the position. Again, at the time, I thought to myself, you know, I'll work in this claims role until something else comes up, you know, in a patrol job or whatever else it was kind of keeping my eye out for. And once I got started in it, I got hooked and never looked back.
What was your first job in claims?
Sure. It was a claims rep in workers' compensation. That's where I've spent my entire career. And it was classic, you know, get hired, show up day one. You have a desk full of somebody else's claims who's no longer there, and trial by fire. So that was my first claims experience. It was hopping out of desk and started making calls day one, and trying to figure out how to handle claims when I really had no clue what I was doing.
Rob, was your first interaction with claims and underwriting and insurance world that day when your friend said, I'm an underwriter? Or was there someone in your family that you could at least draw upon in the insurance industry? Or was your background in college somewhat related to it?
That was it. That was my first experience. So I fell into law enforcement because that's what my dad did. My dad was a police officer for like 26 years. And so again, I grew up always having that in the back of my mind as something I wanted to do, and glad I did it. But right, I had no idea, you know, about insurance. I didn't know what an underwriter was, from a loss control representative to claims to, you know, what an experience mod was. None of it. I had no clue. And so it was a learning experience, to say the least. You know, Trish, you mentioned it before. Some colleges have risk management programs. Mine did, but I never had an interest in it at the time. So, you know, all my schooling and everything pointed me towards law enforcement. And you know, all I knew about insurance was people kind of had to have it. And that was it.
When you first stepped into your first claims position, did you go through a training, or was it all on the job?
It started out as on the job, but then I did have a sort of a 2-week crash course. And I worked for, my first job was with a national carrier. And so at the time they would fly, you know, all kinds of folks out from across the country, put us in a room for 2 weeks, and again, taught us all there is to know about, you know, insurance and workers' comp. And it was a great experience, especially because, like, again, we've already mentioned a lot of the folks there. It was a former sales guy, a former music major, you know, somebody who started in underwriting and didn't like it. Somebody who one of our classmates maybe worked on like a golf course or something like that. And so just the, you know, land of misfit toys, if you will. It was all different backgrounds. You know, nobody grew up, you know, sitting in a cardboard box, pretending it was a cubicle with a headset, you know, taking recorded statements as a kid. It wasn't, you know, anything any of us thought we would be doing, but, you know, we all ended up there. And I still have a lot of close friends from that group until this day, so.
Oh my God. There's so many images that popped in my head. One, my daughter and I just watched the Rudolph show on Saturday night from 1963. So, or 64. And you mentioned Land of Misfit Toys. I'm like, we should do a still animation or whatever, that clay animation version of insurance. I bet that would be fun. But who doesn't dream about doing recorded statements as a kid? Like that would be awesome. But that's such a great point, because everybody, and I've had the same experience with the people that I've met in the claims industry, everybody comes with a different career before they stepped into claims, and they come with different perspectives. So when you have a team of claims people, you're usually dealing with a pretty diverse set of perspectives, which is super helpful. Like, you don't get that in the legal world. Most lawyers go from college to law school to a legal job. You know, maybe they've had different legal jobs along the way, and that's the perspective they get, but it's slightly different than in claims. So I love that. Did you find that helpful as you began to learn and, you know, your career expanded in claims?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was really comforting, actually, to show up to this class. And again, you don't know anybody, you don't know anything about insurance, you know, you're supposed to have this crash course, if you will, and you show up and you find out that you know, everybody else was as clueless as you were. And so again, I was finding some comfort in that, absolutely. And then, you know, not only that, but knowing now that you have these connections all over the country, where, you know, you could bounce questions off each other. You know, you could commiserate with each other. It was, again, an experience that I'm glad I had. I wouldn't have traded for anything. You know, a lot of other companies at the time, especially, weren't doing that sort of mass training. Like you said, it was mostly on the job or, you know, just training in your local office. And so getting to meet all those people, you know, with the diverse backgrounds and from all over the country, it was really something I'll never forget.
Did you fall in love with claims immediately, or is it something that grew on you?
It was pretty quick that I would say I fell in love with claims. And again, there was so many things that crossed over from law enforcement. Like I said, it was the investigations. It was the, you know, just piecing things together, you know, to make sense. It was the helping people, you know. So workers' comp, you know, we get a claim because somebody had some sort of an unfortunate accident, illness, whatever it might have been. And so it's the opportunity to help somebody. You know, all those things certainly played a role, and they were all things that I could connect with, like I said, from my days in law enforcement.
Yeah, when you talk about investigating and piecing things together, that's the question I was going to ask is, you know, you said you were assigned to a prison for some of that time you were a cop, but I'm sure you had to either look at accident photos or go on the scene and recreate things. And I, you know, what skills in those terms when you're a cop do you draw upon when you handle claims now?
Sure. A lot of it was, again, paying attention to the little things, little cues. You know, finding things in medical records, you know, just the digging that you had to do, could never really make assumptions. You know, it was, again, a lot of the details, detail-oriented things that, you know, you pick up on, or it's, you know, most of what we do is on the phone. So it's trying to pick up voice inflections and, you know, things. And it's also goes back to, again, just that understanding that, you know, somebody seems nervous with you on the phone, for example, when you're a claims start, well, this might be the first claim they ever had, and they just have no clue what to expect. And sometimes it's just that putting people at ease to help them understand the process and make them comfortable and explain to them, you know, what you're doing, why you're doing it. And again, all stuff that that I could draw on from my days with the sheriff's office.
Can you tell if people are lying?
I can tell when my kids are lying. That.
I can't.
Can we bring you along to depositions next time? Can you be like a tag along? That'd be helpful for us.
It's funny because I would, when I was doing first and third party property work, I would have my SIU guys sitting next to me when I was doing EUOs. Because like I was so busy like asking questions, and they would like just hone in on body language, and they'd be like, "Trisha, that guy's not telling the truth." So I would always love to have cops in the room. They were so intuitive. So that's so cool. Let's talk about, so you've been at West Bend Mutual for what, 10 years now? Is that right?
10 going on 11 years. Correct.
And you started out in a claims manager. Now you're the director of claims. Is that right?
So when I joined our division, like I said, just over 10 years ago, we were a new division to the company. And that was exciting because it was almost like opening your own business, but having the backing of a company that, well, is now 126 years old and has all the wealth of knowledge and experience, you know, that you would want to draw from. But I started as one of our division's first 10 employees. I started out as a claim rep, you know, handling work comp claims, working with accounts, worked my way up to manager. And then a little over a year ago now, I was named the director of claims for the division.
So 10 years, I would imagine, has probably left you with some lessons. And I want to get into that. Let's start with what you would say to a new claims rep. What advice would you impart upon them that you think would help them do their job better or make their life easier?
Sure. First and foremost, I would tell them to have patience. And again, it's ranging from patients when, you know, working on a claim or working with, you know, customers, all the way to patients with your career path. You know, there's so many times that, you know, I see younger adjusters, inexperienced adjusters who are looking to, you know, hey, I'm going to be an adjuster for 2 years and then I want to get into management. And it's, you know, slow down, take your time, because it's the other thing I always tell the reps is to learn as much as you can, build as much knowledge and bank as much experience as you can, because I was just having this conversation with somebody the other day. It's, you know, an employer can, they can take away your desk, they can take away your computer, they can take away your job, but they can't take away your knowledge and your experience. So learn as much as you can while you're in the position that you're in, because again, it's something nobody can ever take away from you, and you can take that with you wherever you go.
How do you recommend they get knowledge? Is it on the job? Is it outside the job? What do you think they should do, focus on?
Definitely on the job. You know, there's no replacement for on the job experience. But then it's also, you know, taking your interests and whatnot, like you said, outside the job. And, you know, maybe you're taking classes, you know, for one of the insurance designations, or, you know, maybe you're, you know, shadowing somebody in a different department or whatever it might be, trying to really, you know, round out your experience. And, you know, I also like to tell people to, you know, be irreplaceable, learn a skill that nobody else has, because, you know, it's harder to, you know, part ways with somebody when they're the only one that, you know, can do something, or they're exceptional at their job.
When you talk about young adjusters gaining experience, how much interplay and communication is there amongst the adjusters with respect to a claim that may be a little more complex? I know in our firm, we have meetings and we have calls. I've called three attorneys in our firm today to bounce questions off them and ideas, and I get the same kind of calls. And does your company kind of recommend that? And then does that happen as a pragmatic day-to-day thing where people can gain experience through folks like you who have been it longer and can say, here, I'm as a veteran at this game, I can tell you how I dealt with it.
Yeah, we absolutely encourage that communication between the adjusters. And again, no two claims are alike. So you're always going to come across something that's new. And so, you know, there's a good chance though that somebody else in the office has handled something maybe similar to that. We're lucky enough to have nurses on all of our teams as well. So when you talk about complexity of claims, especially from a medical standpoint, if an adjuster is getting stuck on something, we are able to have those resources right at the fingertips of the adjusters. So you know, pick up the phone or you message one of the nurses and you ask them, you know, what do you think, you know, does this seem like a proper protocol or treatment or whatever it might be? Absolutely share that information, you know, and even taking that on a broader level, when we all were in the office, we have our seating arrangement here a little different than the vast majority of carriers. So we don't have claims on one floor, underwriting on another floor, you know, loss control on the third floor, whatever. We all sit sort of intermingled with each other, because the theory behind that with my mentor who helped start our division is learning through osmosis. So just by the nature of sitting next to an underwriter as a claims rep and hearing them talk to an agent, you know, about premiums and reserves and how all this impacts, you know, rates and everything like that, you learn so much and you don't even realize it. And you're learning it again through osmosis, through just sitting there listening to the conversations that the underwriter's having. The same thing with our safety folks. You know, you hear them talking to an account about machine guarding issues or an ergonomics issue, and all of a sudden, you know, they get off the phone and you ask, you know, hey, what was that all about? You know, and again, it's this just constant sharing of information, not just between claims reps, but between other departments that really rounds our folks out and gives them that sort of whole, you know, insurance experience, not just claims experience.
I think that's a great point because, like, I, you know, there's a lot of people that don't still don't understand what underwriters do. I always said there should be like an Underwriters for Dummies course, and I would sign up because I think, you know, to have an understanding of what each department is doing, and maybe you're not in the weeds, but to have an understanding of it helps you, like how you adjust a claim, you know, or the impact of what you're doing on the rate increases or whatever it may be. But to have that interplay really, I think, makes you more well-rounded to your point of, you know, you get to take that knowledge where no one can steal it from you, but then it helps you do better at your job. I love that. Do you take part in how your office is set up? Like how, because that's sort of like a newer thing, right? Taking the office setup as an intentional decision is kind of a newer thing for everybody. Before it was more haphazard. Who takes care of that with you guys? Is that you or is that somebody else?
So it's discussions amongst, you know, all the management or the leadership here is, you know, where are we going to put somebody and, you know, where are we going to put them based on what's going to be most beneficial for them? Right. So if you have somebody who's newer, you're obviously going to try and put them close to somebody who's more experienced, somebody who maybe has an interest in actually mentoring somebody, because that makes a difference too. You know, you may put somebody next to a new adjuster next to somebody with 30 years experience, but, you know, they're just not interested in teaching or mentoring, and that's fine. You know, so finding that right fit to whatever it might be, personality or otherwise, and again, putting them, surrounding them with people that are going to make them the most successful.
How do you do your hiring? Like when you set to hire somebody, do you have a certain criteria? Do you look for a certain mindset, a certain skill set? What does that look like for you?
So again, claims is interesting because all different backgrounds, all different personalities. We definitely focus on the customer service piece, you know, who can, you know, communicate clearly, who can stay organized, you know, to be able to handle, you know, volume and questions. And again, claims can be very fast paced. And so, you know, people have to be prepared for that. But at the same time, it's also, you have to have a balance of folks, right? Not everybody is going to be type A outgoing, you know, and that's okay. You know, each claim rep that we have is specifically assigned to accounts. So, you know, we don't just round robin claims when they come in the door here. So a lot of it too is if we have accounts that we think somebody would be a good fit for, you know, again, communication style, personality wise, you know, we certainly keep that in mind when we're looking for new hires. Absolutely.
What about, and you might mention the fast-paced nature of this, because I think that the fast-paced nature plus the exposure and results, which can be high stakes at time, I think can create a stress environment. How do you see that in at play where you're at?
Sure. So absolutely, it's, you know, it's a lot with any job, right? It's, you have A, B, and C that you think you're going to get done for the day. You have, you know, it all planned out, and then one phone call that morning can throw all that out the window, and all of a sudden what you're doing for that day is flipped upside down on its head, right? So, you know, we intentionally here try and keep our claim counts actually lower than industry standard. And we do that not because, again, we don't think people can handle the fast-paced nature or whatever it might be, but it's, we want to give the claim reps enough time to do proper investigations, proper claims handling, you know, get back to insureds and answer their questions, get back to the injured employees, answer their questions. You know, we scale back on the claim volume per rep and hire, you know, intentionally to be prepared for, you know, additional business that we expect to come in the door, because we want our folks to be able to do a good job, right? We want them to have the time to be able to, you know, again, return phone calls, answer emails, you know. And again, does that always work out perfectly? Absolutely not, because again, that's the nature of claims. It's very cyclical, comes in waves, depends on the types of accounts you handle. But we're very intentional with that. And again, it's to help with not just the reps and their desk, but you know, being able to properly assist our customers.
And that's such a point that I want to drive home as well, because if your claim count is too high or you have too much on your plate, and again, this is overall, you know, there's going to be days where you're going to have too high of a claim count, too much on your plate. But as a general experience, if it's under control, you have time to think, you have time to be creative, you have time to really sit down and respond to the things that you need to respond to, versus just putting out fires. If you're just putting out fires, the first thing that you're going to lose is the customer service angle. And like, I'm with you. You and I are in the customer service business. It may be more on the professional side as far as law and claims, but it's still, when it all is said and done, when you strip away all the crap, it's a customer service profession that if you're not cognizant of the workload that your team members have on a day-to-day basis, you will lose that. So I love that that is a focus of yours. How do you stay on top of that from a practical perspective? Do you monitor the cases that are open versus closed? How does that work?
We do. We monitor inventories, you know, and not just that, you know, we talk to our folks. We ask them, how you doing? How you feeling? You know, how busy do you feel you are? You know, somebody asked me a couple of weeks ago in a training session, they said, you know, what's your focus? The customer is your number one, right? And to an extent, you know, the customer is extremely important to me. You know, that's how we, you know, make our profit. You know, our agents are extremely important to us. But that's really the focus of our reps. My focus as the director is our staff. Right. It's to make sure I need to make sure that they have everything they need to do their job and do it well. Right. So they're my focus. And then in turn, if they have the time and the resources, they'll do a great job of taking care of the customers. That'll come just by the nature of them, you know, having what they need to be able to do their job and do it right.
So let's say someone has mastered patience and done the extra learning, and they're in a claims position, and they do want to move up to, say, a director of claims or management. What would be your advice to them on what, either from a mindset perspective or what they should do to take their career to the next level?
A lot of it is talking with your manager, your direct supervisor, you know, talking with the other supervisors and managers here. I think there's always been, and this was certainly my experience, you have your perception of what management is, and then, you know, you get into it and it's all the gloriousness of approving PTO and, you know, making sure you're staffed appropriately and budgets and, you know, the financials and everything else. And so it's a lot more than just the teaching, the mentoring, you know, the prospects or whatever else we might do. There's a whole nother side to it that a lot of folks don't always get to see. And it's one of those things that you just don't understand until you're actually in it. So, you know, I think it would be drawing on the knowledge of, you know, our own supervisors and managers here, you know, asking them, you know, working for them, what do you think it is that I need to do, improve on, work on, to get into management, if that's something they're interested in. I think a big mistake a lot of people make is assuming that the best technicians are always the best managers or leaders, right? And it's just not the case. That's not to say that somebody can, you know, somebody can certainly be both a great technician and a great manager, a great leader, but, you know, there's technical skills of claims, and then there's the people side of it. Right. And you can know every statute and every jurisdiction that you handle and all the filings you need to do and everything. But Does that mean you can have a tough conversation with somebody about job performance? Does that mean, you know, you're able to, you know, put off everything you're doing to, you know, handle a customer complaint or whatever that might be? And, you know, it's taking all those things into consideration and figuring out, you know, what is it about maybe, again, management, if that's what somebody's interested in, that that you don't know.
And I think along those lines is there is nothing wrong with admitting to what you're not good at. Like, if you do the work to say, all right, what do I really love? What do I really excel at? And what don't I excel at? And not be ashamed to say, yeah, I'm not good at the technical, but I'm really great at people, like you said, or vice versa, however you tend to fall. But to be able to say, this is my strength. You know, this person over here is good at technical. I'm good at people. Us as a team, we make a whole person. We make a phenomenal customer service experience. I don't need to be everything to everybody. And I think that's where some of the mental health issues that happen, at least in the legal profession. And I also think claims, because I think they're so similar in the stresses that they really, that people deal with, is that idea of you have to be good at everything. You have to be perfect at everything. And I think to let that go and really be okay on, let me double down on my strengths. Let me admit my weaknesses. If I can make them better, great. But if I can't, I could find somebody else to fill that job. And I like that. So when people are looking to make a move, really to do some self-reflection first, find out what the job actually entails, like you said, and then also find out if that's the strength, if that job has the strengths designed for you, because that does not just a claims advice. That's like career advice. And I think that's
right.
That they have someone like you in your position that recognizes that. I think that's amazing.
Well, and again, it's, you know, self-awareness, like you're exactly what you're describing. It's, you know, admitting, you know, what you're maybe not so great at and acknowledging your strengths and, you know, finding people, you know, who surround yourself with people that can make up for your weaknesses, you know, absolutely. And the management group that I work with here certainly does that for me. I'm sure they could tell you everything I'm terrible at.
Well, let's shift a little bit and talk about where you think the insurance world is headed, because there's a lot of innovation. I read, not to take the spotlight away from your company, but I do read a lot about Lemonade and like their business model. And I think there's a lot of other companies that are doing things differently. Where do you see, and you could talk about examples in your own company if you want, but where do you see innovation happening in insurance?
Sure. It's, you know, a lot of innovation is surrounding communication and speed, right? It's customers want answers. They want them quickly. And that's where we see a lot of the innovation sort of being drawn to. And, you know, we're doing things like working with texting options for injured employees and insureds and things like that. And again, it's a preference of communication. A lot of it's a lot of it's just, you know, ease and, you know, preference. But that's certainly what we're following in the industry is, again, how can you communicate better? How can you communicate quicker? And that's where, again, you're seeing a lot of these newer companies pop up and try and capitalize on those things. You know, I'm always impartial to the phone call, you know, actually talking to a live person. I think there's certainly something, you know, to be said for that. But again, also understanding that that's not how everybody wants to communicate these days. Some people would like to just say, you know, you need an update on their claim or vice versa. You know, they might prefer to just send you a text and tell you what's going on, you know, or a picture or whatever it might be of some damage that they're dealing with. Or, you know, like I said, in our division of work comp, you know, or an injury or a quick update. That seems to be where I see a lot of the innovation drawing close to and what we're following closely to try and, you know, stay on top of things.
Yeah, because I think innovation doesn't always have to be something completely new. It could be making an existing process better. You know, right. In text messaging, I know a lot of some companies are trying to figure out how can they use what is hot or what most people are using now for forms of communication. How can they bring that into the fold? And I think claims and legal are a little bit behind the times on that. Like I know there are law firms that are starting to use text for case updates. We haven't done it yet. I will get there eventually, but I like that you're looking at innovation in a very strategic way, which is how can we make something better? Not necessarily, I mean, let me bring in this new thing to do or employ, but how can we use something existing to our advantage?
And I think it's answering a lot of simple questions too, right? Keeping it very simple. Like you said, it doesn't have to be some new grandiose thing or product. It might be just a slight tweak to a process or procedure that makes all the difference, you know? And again, that's something that we try and stress is, again, keep it simple. It doesn't always have to be, you know, complicated, complex, new, shiny object, whatever it might be. Might be just a little tweak here and there that changes everything.
I was just, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, because I'm made fun of incessantly within the firm for my love of drones. I do some aviation work and I love drones. And I know that it's something that claims folks use now.
He's a nerd, but we like our nerds.
Well, to be fair, Trish, you and I are both Star Wars aficionados.
So I have a big stand. But okay. Listen, Rob is a big MacGyver fan, so we're all nerd, right?
Like, well, I think when you have a last name like that, I think it was probably a nickname growing up or something. I mean, it lends itself very well to liking MacGyver, which I love MacGyver growing up, by the way. Great. My mom had a crush on him, but I'll leave that for another.
Well, we were talking before you got on the podcast how he played hockey with MacGyver.
So. Oh, did you really? Wow. Holy
mackerel. I did. I was able to meet MacGyver back when I was probably about 8 years old, and it was everything you could have ever imagined.
Wow. Did he fashion the pen to sign your autograph out of, like, twigs? And, you know, it was incredible.
No, that would have really made the experience.
Yeah. No, so I have to ask, I mean, are you guys using drones to investigate claims? It's something I think is so fascinating. I know some folks are doing that. I know some experts are using that. Is that something you've incorporated yet, or are you looking at doing?
So our company has certainly, you know, started using drones and drone technology. So again, that's a bit out of my wheelhouse since I'm in the work comp space. We haven't found a great way to use drones yet for that. But if we do,
I can help you. I could get creative with you on that. But that's off air. I'll do that later.
But we've absolutely started to adopt some of that technology because again, it's some stuff you can only put off for so long too, right? You have to keep up with the industry. You know, even if you're not the first, you know, don't be the last, right?
Right. Yep.
So, well, let's talk COVID, because what's a podcast episode without talking about COVID? Let me give you my take, and then I want you to get your take. But I feel like the insurance industry and legal industry, there were big parts of it that were more prepared for COVID than other industries. Especially claims when a significant portion of people work out of their house. How do you agree with that, disagree with that? And how do you see the insurance industry adapting to COVID?
Sure. So when back sometime in March, when we were all sent home from the office, I would say that we were fortunate enough to be pretty prepared. So our reps, the vast majority of our claims reps, were already working from home at least one day a week. And so it was nice in that regard because most people had a setup at home or, you know, a faux office even, a workspace for themselves. And, again, they had a general setup where they could do their job and be functional. Now, throw into the mix, kids doing virtual school and pets and, you know, spouses or roommates or whatever it might be, that made it interesting for everybody, including myself. So that, that was definitely an interesting experience. But the adaptability of people, definitely underestimated, that's for sure. It seemed like almost too good to be true how we really didn't miss a beat in terms of a lot of our claim handling and capabilities and workarounds. And, you know, you sort of have to, right? When you're thrown into the fire and you're told, you know, you can't be in the office anymore. Well, you know, it's now you're forced to find a way to make it work. And that's what we did. And, you know, is it going to change the industry? Absolutely. You know, there's going to be more people wanting to work from home, you know, on a much more regular basis. There's going to be people that question the need for, you know, office space and things like that. On the flip side of that, you know, I certainly think there's something to be said though about, you know, maintaining your culture and having people in the office, that camaraderie, that again, that ability to bounce ideas off of people. I can't tell you how many times, you know, we've solved a problem that we didn't even know existed just because we ended up, you know, chatting about whatever, you know, at the coffee pot. And, you know, we found out, you know, we had this problem or that problem going on that, you know, we didn't even know about. So there's something to be said absolutely for being in an office setting. Like I said, our setup was based around learning in osmosis, learning from not only other reps, but other departments. And so it'll just be, you know, finding the right mix of that, finding the right blend of how can you keep some of that while still, you know, being virtual or having so many people working from home.
And I think that's so tricky. Like, and I've gone through that same exercise in my head, and I've read a lot about kind of what are some of the good things that are going to come from this. And I think one good thing is that people are going to really be able to have some more flexibility in their schedule that they maybe didn't have pre-COVID. But, you know, my law firm, and I imagine the same for you guys, we were fortunate going into COVID, going into March of 2020 with an existing culture, with an existing camaraderie that, you know, we got because we were in close proximity to each other. It's harder to get the camaraderie over Zoom or a phone call. So we had that sweat equity, if you will. I don't know if that's, we had it banked. We had camaraderie in the bank already that we could draw from when we moved to Zoom. But if you're always on Zoom or always on the phone, how can you create that camaraderie? Yeah, I think you can. It may be harder. I don't know. Maybe you have to be more intentional, deliberate about it. But yeah, so when we come out of COVID, when the vaccine saves all of our lives and we're all back to normal, if that's ever even such a thing, you know, will we go back to the old ways of requiring people in the office, or will we be okay with, you know, just going along like we have? Or is there some mixture in between? And I think your answer hits it on the head. We're not sure, but we're mindful of the issues. And I think with a lot of things that are COVID related, we're just gonna have to wait and see. Like, you just don't know. Like, who knows what's going to happen with the vaccine? Who knows what's going to happen, you know, tomorrow? But I like that mindset. I think that's probably my long-winded way of saying, I think, you know, to honor flexibility and give people what they want is great, but always be cognizant of that there are benefits to in-person.
Yeah, it's absolutely, it's being flexible and going back to your point on innovation. You know, sometimes it's not just, you know, externally, it's internally. You know, how are we going to, like you said, keep your culture virtually? It's, you know, you know, adjusting on the fly. So last night we took our kids out to go see Christmas lights, and you know, I turned around to ask my older boys, they're 7 and 9, you know, hey, what do you think? And I turn around and my 7-year-old, he's drinking his hot chocolate completely shirtless. And I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I dumped hot chocolate on myself and it was wet. So I just, you know, took my shirt off. And I was like, okay, sure. Yeah. Make adjustments, you know, just throw a coat on and hey, whatever, it works. So
it reminds me of, I was interviewing somebody once over Zoom and I had another partner with me on the interview. And this associate we were interviewing, my daughter walks in naked right behind me and she doesn't realize I'm on Zoom. And then she does. And then it's like the look on her face and she just drops down to the floor. And I was like, well, welcome to 2020. Like, I never in person would have had a naked 8-year-old walk into an interview, but now I have. So naked hot chocolate, where, you know, it happens. And part of life.
Like you said, that's 2020.
Yep. I know I need to wrap up this because we are a little time constraints, but I do want to get to one last topic, which is one of my favorites, is I want to pick your brain on the lawyers that you love and the lawyers that you don't. And you don't have to name names, but and I know our practices are different. Like, I don't do comp, but I think some of the general themes are still there. What do you think makes a great attorney, the people that you work with, the traits that really make them stand out?
Yeah, so attorneys that, again, communicate regularly, that follow our billing guidelines, that, again, it, you know, proactive instead of reactive, so we're not putting out fires before, you know, hearings or things like that. So it's, you know, it's always interesting, you know, when you refer business to somebody. We've certainly had our, you know, external defense counsel who they like to woo you initially. And then all of a sudden when they have a lot of business, you know, all of a sudden you start to see things drop off a little bit. And so it's again, it's promises kept, right? It's, you know, if we say we're going to have an initial eval to you in 30 days and whatnot, you know, that's what you expect. That's what's provided. It's, you know, making themselves available. So, you know, when we do have questions, you know, off the cuff on something, or just, you know, want to run a case by somebody, that we have the ability to do that. So again, it's a lot of the stuff we've already talked about: communication, flexibility, being responsive, you know, being just being a resource for us, you know, even if we don't have a claim with you at the time, it's making yourself available, you know, to be a resource.
Do you think there's such thing as over communication? Do you ever get annoyed with your lawyers? Like, oh Lord, here she is again. Like, I don't need another email or a phone call from her. Is there such a thing as that?
You know, there probably is. I think that's more the exception than the rule, but, right. We don't need, you know, updates every, you know, few weeks would be nice. Updates every few hours, probably not necessary.
That would be a lot of emails, I think. Well, and maybe this is just the inverse of what you just said, but what are some of the things that your pet peeves of lawyers that you've worked with in the past, who I'm sure you don't work with anymore, but the pet peeves of the people that you've used as lawyers?
Yeah, and like you said, it's, you know, flip the script of what we just talked about. It's, you know, if you can't ever get a hold of somebody, well, you know, whether it's a claim you're working on with them or not, it, you know, it makes it difficult to maintain a relationship when, you know, it's always so difficult to get a hold of somebody. You know, paralysis by analysis, right? We don't want to see, you know, every sort of potential situation and how it's going to play out. It's more of what's the most likely outcome, okay? And how can we get there? It's, you know, simplifying things to say, you know, this is what we're striving for. These are the risks that, you know, you're taking by, you know, whatever approach it is to the case. But we think, you know, we can get a claim settled, or, you know, we can get a win at a trial or whatever it might be. Again, it's laying the groundwork, keeping it, you know, simple, easy to explain, easy to follow along with. And again, having some confidence in your capabilities, right? It's, you know, oh, we drew, you know, a certain, you know, plaintiff attorney or judge, and I don't know how things are going to go. It's like, well, let's try, right? Let's have our best crack at it and, you know, see what we can do.
Well, I love that too, because yeah, I think so many lawyers think that they have to have the right answer, that they have to in the beginning predict the end result, and if they're not 100% on point, that they will not be considered a good lawyer. And I think shifting the mindset to, listen, we want your best effort. We want the top three likely outcomes, the risks and benefits to all those outcomes. And we want you to tell us what you think is the best one. And then we'll figure it out internally if that's the process that you have, but then we'll get back to you on what you want. But having some confidence in what you're saying, but yet not having to be certain in what you're saying. That's my big thing. Clarity over certainty. Clarity is what you want. You don't necessarily need certainty. And I think that's, so I think that's awesome. One last topic. This is what I meant to talk to you about before, but I glossed over it, but I just looked at my notes. There is a pretty significant number of claims people out of work. I think that's one downside to COVID, is that some insurance companies have laid off some larger companies like Disney and Walmart, and they've laid off. Do you have any advice for people looking in the claims world, looking for a job, how they stand out, how they get their foot in the door? Because I know that's a lot of the people that I've heard, not complain, but that's what they struggle with, is they are like, I applied, and I can't get a response. I can't get my foot in the door. What do you say to those people to help them stand out?
And it's, I'm glad you brought it up. We've actually been, you know, blessed enough to be hiring, you know, the vast majority of this time. So we're growing. So again, if you're looking for a position, look us up. But if, again, you're struggling to find a position, I just recently started, you know, really getting into LinkedIn probably over the last, you know, 8 to 12 months. You know, if you're not getting a response, if you're, you know, curious about a job opening, if, you know, there's a company that you're interested in that doesn't have any job openings, you know, I would not hesitate to reach out to those people, whether it's, again, on LinkedIn or, you know, via email or whatever it might be, you know, make it known that, you know, you're looking, and, you know, the quickest path might not always be through an application on your human resources website, right? It might be just reaching out to some of these folks directly and saying, hey, you know, this is my background, this is my experience, you know, looking for a position, you know, and even if it's not the position that you want, maybe it's a position that has applicable or transferable skills that gets your foot in the door. You know, to not just be, close yourself off to, you know, I have to find a claims rep job. Like you said, maybe it's a job in subrogation, for example, you know, that, gets your foot in the door, or, you know, some other, you know, position, you know, consultant somewhere, whatever it might be. And again, it's, make yourself, as known as possible. You know, I know a lot of people say, you know, I post stuff, you know, how I'm looking on, you know, LinkedIn, for example. I keep going back to that because that's just what I've been drawn to most recently. But, you know, direct message a lot of these folks, you know, managers, directors, whoever it might be, and let them know you're looking. You know, because, again, just because there's not a position open today, you know, maybe come January, February, something might be opening up that's not yet posted. And so they already have a candidate in mind because, you know, you've been communicating with them. So be as proactive as you can. Don't close yourself off to, you know, I can only take a job in this, you know, space. You know, again, if you're, maybe you're a liability rep, well, you know, did you ever consider trying comp? Did you ever consider trying property, whatever it might be? So, you know, be open, be flexible, and again, be proactive, not reactive to a job posting. You know, maybe you get the inside track on a job that's not yet posted.
Yep. And one of the things I've told folks when they're looking too is I think they get laser focused on finding a job, and that means resume, LinkedIn, reaching out to folks, resume, LinkedIn. I mean, there's only so much that you could do. And I said, you know, this may last a week, or it may last, unfortunately, months. And so when you're doing that, better yourself during that process. Take 1 hour a day and do free online courses. And if you're a workers' comp person, do one in Subro. If you're a Subro, do one in GL. Learn about how liens apply. I mean, just take an hour of self-reflection. You'll never have more time than now. You know, it's not a great situation, but there's a silver lining, and, you know, use the time, right?
Absolutely. I know my sister-in-law during, you know, the whole pandemic was looking for a job. And in the meantime, she created a networking group, again, on social media, of other people looking for jobs. You know, and even if it, you know, came of it where, you know, somebody found a job through it, fantastic. And if not, It was a group of people, again, all with the same goal of looking for a position and, you know, again, sharing their experiences, what's worked for you, what's not working for you, you know, somebody to, you know, ask for tips or tricks, or maybe it's just, you know, support, somebody to listen to, you know, the struggle of looking for a position. But, you know, absolutely. There's, like you said, if you're looking right now, there's no better time to, you know, do some self-improvement, self-reflection, because again, you may never get that time back.
I love that. Well, on that, I'm going to wrap up with two last questions. One is, tell me what's going on your personal world right now, as far as your favorite book, your favorite podcast, or your favorite TV show.
Sure. Absolutely. So, favorite podcast right now,
besides mine,
the Defense Never Rests. I mean, that's obviously number one. Absolutely.
Right, obviously. Next, well, after that one.
I try and switch it up and not listen to the same stuff over and over again. I've been listening recently to a lot of stuff by a gentleman by the name of Dave Duran. You know, he's entrepreneur, leadership coach, and he's had some really good content as of recent. I follow a gentleman by the name of Jocko Willink. You know, him and his crew, they're a lot of ex-Navy SEALs who are taking their experience from military and making it transferable to the business world, which I find extremely interesting. You know, and again, we're just talking about people, you know, looking for jobs. One of his big things that, takeaways that I was just listening to the other day was the difference between motivation and discipline, right? It's, you know, everybody can, you know, watch a video or listen to, you know, a podcast and get all energized about whatever it is, losing weight or, you know, finding a new hobby or looking for a job. But it's really comes down to the discipline of taking the time to do these things and do what you need to do to accomplish your goals, right? So, again, those are probably two of the most recent podcasts or content that I've been listening to and taking in.
I love it. Well, where can people find you, especially those looking for a job, because you're going to get a lot of people emailing you now. So where
yeah,
can they find
absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. So I'm at Rob McEver on LinkedIn. That's probably the easiest way to find me right now. And again, my email's up there. It's, you know, message me on LinkedIn or email me directly. You know, happy to chat with anybody, whether it's you're looking for a job or, again, just looking to chat about, you know, insurance, claims, whatever it might be. I talked to a group of high school students not that long ago, and it was all about, you know, I was trying to bring, you know, insurance into their lives, enlighten them on what an awesome industry it is. And, you know, some of them were like, well, I want to be in IT. Well, I want to be, you know, in marketing. It's like, well, guess what? You know, our company has human resources, marketing, finance, accounting, safety. Like I said, we have nurses on staff. We have the gamut of positions. And again, that goes for the vast majority of carriers. So, you know, if you're looking for something, if you're interested, feel free to reach out. But again, the insurance industry as a whole, you know, there's something out there for you. I can assure you, you know, whatever type of position you're looking for, you can likely find it in insurance.
That's awesome. Well, Rob, I super appreciate you coming on. I could talk to you for like another hour, but I super appreciate you coming on and giving us some of your wisdom through your career and claims. And hopefully some people on the podcast have gotten some value from it too. So I super appreciate it. Thanks, Nate, for joining me on the co-host last minute, I have
no,
to say.
No
I
problem.
Appreciate
Thank
that. And for everybody listening, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Give us a rating, a review, a like, whatever medium that you're watching or listening to this from. We super appreciate the support. And make sure you join us next time on The Defense Never Rests. We will see you then.